The following message is from Christ Community Church in Athens, Georgia. For more information and sermons, go to www.christ-community.com. Thank you for listening.
All right. I want you to say this. I want you to say this out loud, okay? I want you to say, my work matters to God. That wasn't bad. Let's do it again with a little more, I don't know, oomph. Like you actually believe it. First, let's get clarity about what your work is, okay? Now, my work matters to God. Okay, that is true because God is always working. What we hang our hat on as Christians is that there is a God who is working, and he is working to take everything broken and bruised and battered in this world, and he intends and will make it better than brand new. And if you belong to him, if you're part of his family, then part of the best news in all the world is that you have been assigned a particular portion of that work. Your work matters to God. Now, 56 days ago, we started this journey through this story called Nehemiah, and what we're learning is how we do God's work God's way. And we've been learning how to do that as we watch this man Nehemiah and a group of people do construction work as they rebuild the walls of the city of Jerusalem. Today, what we're going to learn is that 52 days after they started, we started this 56 days ago, but 52 days after they started their project, the walls are complete. The walls have been rebuilt. The walls are up. The gates are finished, the people are now protected, they have finished the project that God has for them. And then what you see on the back end is that their enemies, the people who were opposing them, the people who were convinced that the wall would not be built, they see what's happened, and they perceive, they know, they put two and two together that this isn't just a group of people working hard, but God's behind this. So that creates a lesson for you and me. Here's the lesson. In the form of a question, we'll put this on the screen. As we talk about what it looks like to do God's work God's way, here's the question that I believe that you're supposed to wrestle with today. How do I know I have done God's work God's way? How do I know? I'm going to go ahead and give you the answer from this text. That you know, it's not the only way you know, but you know in a real way that you have done God's work God's way when God is the ultimate explanation given by spiritual outsiders. They look at your work and they go, how did that happen? And even spiritual outsiders, just like you see here in Nehemiah 6, at some point have to say, ultimately, God did this. So take a minute to think about your work and say, can spiritual outsiders, your friends, your acquaintances, your coworkers who aren't a part of the family of God yet, can they look at your work and go, you know what? They work hard, but there's something else behind this. Ultimately, God is the explanation for the success in your work. Can people say that about you? Look at 15 and 16 in Nehemiah 6. First off, I want you to see the change of heart in Nehemiah's opponents. Now, up to this point, people like Tobiah were convinced that the wall would not be built. They were going to fight against the wall being built, and they were convinced it wouldn't happen. Nehemiah shows up, we'll win. The wall won't be built. Nehemiah lays out his plan. It's okay, they won't build the wall. They start to build the wall. We are still going to win. This wall, this project will not be completed. Progress after progress after progress, we will win. They won't build the wall. It won't be finished. Until they look around and it's done. The walls are built. The gates have been fastened. The people are safe and they're protected. And the enemies of Nehemiah go from confidence, and what does it say here in verse 15? It says that they were afraid and they fell greatly in their own esteem. They lost their self-confidence. They lost their nerve. Why? Well, look at the text. Because, verse 16, they perceived, they knew. They put two and two together that this work, this project, the building of this wall had been accomplished with the help of our God. So they were able to see here Nehemiah and all these people building their walls, but ultimately, God did this. Let's talk about your success in your work for just a second, okay? Now, that might be good grades. That might be a clean house. That might be well-adjusted children. That might be reaching your fourth quarter goals. That might be some reward and accolades you get for the work that you do. It might mean that you have more money, better health. Where does that come from? When people look at your life, do they see that ultimately this isn't just about you being smart or wise, innovative, faithful? Think about the story of David and Goliath, okay? So you have little David, the shepherd boy, and you have Goliath the giant, and David, the underdog, beats the heavily favored Goliath. Trust me, some of you are getting nervous. I'm making a football reference. I'm not. We're not talking football this morning. Malcolm Gladwell is a fairly well-known writer, and he wrote a book where this story of David and Goliath is front and center. And what he says is, for all the story about being an underdog, David actually had some real advantages. For the fight that he wanted to fight, he had better weapons, the stones and the slingshot. That there were inherent advantages that he had, and so therefore he actually wasn't an underdog. So let's dispel the myth of the underdog. And what you'll hear in a lot of churches, what some of us grew up with is, be like David. Be courageous. Fight the giants. The only problem with teaching that is that that's not what the Bible is trying to help us learn. David himself says, and maybe he did have advantages. It certainly was a smarter play to grab those stones and use that slingshot than to try to fight Goliath with King Saul's armor. Okay? That point's made very, very clear in the story. But David himself says, God will deliver me before the fight, and afterwards says, God did deliver me. Now, those words aren't just grabbed out of the air. The entire book of 1 Samuel has this message that says, you want to know what you could put your hope in life? If you need deliverance, if you need rescue, God will be your deliverer. Did David kill Goliath? Yes. But ultimately, who was responsible for the outcome of that battle, of that fight? God. He's going to absolutely hate that I do this, but my in-laws are here. They're here for the weekend. And some of you know that my father-in-law is a football coach, has been the head football coach of Vestavia Hills High School in Birmingham since 1978. Now, he really won't like it when I tell you that. He has won more high school football games than any other football coach in the history of the state of Alabama. He will really not like it when I say, in real ways, he is the most successful high school football coach ever in the history of the state of Alabama. What he will like is when I say, what he loves more than the number of wins are the number of men that are walking the face of this earth, who work hard, who love their families, who follow Jesus, because they were part of that program, because of his example, because boys who are now men, maybe even some grandpas, sat in Buddy and Linda Anderson's house every Wednesday night for an FCA huddle. Now, when you ask coaches, why is Buddy Anderson so successful as a coach? You're going to hear things like, he has impeccable timing in terms of his play calling. the culture he's created with his coaches, the way that his kids know how much he genuinely cares for them and loves them. But I can tell you, if you ask Coach Anderson, so how did you get to Vestavia Hills? God. Why'd you stay at Vestavia Hills? He's been at one school since 1971. Why'd you stay? God. What's the reason for your success? God. And I can tell you, I have names of people who aren't followers of Jesus. Coaches, peers, who will say, Buddy's a great coach. But at some point in time, you have to believe that God has blessed his work. When you do God's work God's way, people can see that. Now, this is where you might get stuck, okay? Because you're like, I'm not a football coach. Like, the success of my job doesn't come down to wins and losses. So we need to think really clearly about what success looks like for us. In our work as a student, in our work in our home, in our work at our job, in our work in the places that we serve, right? And you need to ask yourself, and it's a good, honest question, so what are you saying? Is if you do God's work God's way, then you're going to be the most successful outwardly, you're going to be the best, you're going to be all those things. No. If I was to give Coach Anderson a microphone right now, which he'll run out the door before we do that, then we could sit here and have conversations about the number of godly men who coached faithfully over the years and didn't have the same kind of outward success that he has had. And so I want you to hear me clearly. When I talk about doing God's work and I talk about success, I'm talking about a way of life which doesn't always equate to the biggest, the best, the brightest, the most outwardly successful. That's not what we're after. That's not even what we're saying that you have to be able to do in order to allow spiritual outsiders to see the work of God. So here is a way for you and I to do God's work God's way, any of us, in such a way that people can't ignore it and people can't explain it. That the only answer that they're going to be able to give at some point in time, they might call it luck, I might call it just something about who they are, but there's a power bigger than them. Maybe they know, I might even say God, or they might even know you're a Christian and say their Christian faith shapes them this way. But here are four things that show up in our life as we work that gives evidence that we're not only doing God's work, but we're doing God's work God's way. Here's the first one. Joy. That in your work, there is a almost sometimes giddy expectation of the possibility in the situation and circumstances where normal, healthy people would respond either in anger or apathy. Joy. You express that in that situation when everybody else has the rumbly grumblies? When everybody else is just ready to throw in the towel? People can't ignore that. Joy. Rest. Rest. When you embrace the limitations of your humanity, you are one person. You are not God. You are not an automaton. You are not a machine. You are a human being. And when you embrace your limitations, in the places where people are going to, normal, healthy people, are going to basically go, no, we're just going to have to burn the candle at both ends. They're going to embrace a life of busyness, or they're going to believe the only way that they can thrive is to work hard and then to be self-indulgent in the way that they live. They're not resting. They're not trusting. They're working hard, believing that they are, that basically their success is the byproduct of what they do. And then in order to survive, they have to sort of just manage all kinds of self-care beyond even levels of healthy, but they're like, this is the rhythm. All out, all in, but it's all me. No rest. Joy, rest, courage. Courage, that's the third one. Not you being a superhero. The ordinary, everyday courage of just showing up in the place where God's assigned you and being you. Not buying into the conventional wisdom in your workplace and your field that says this is what it looks like to fit in. In those places where a normal, healthy person says, shh, don't rock the boat. Don't say anything about that. You courageously go, hey, I've got a question. Respecting chains of command and just lanes of authority, you're going to at least go, hey, can we just go ahead and say that I don't think this is okay? Joy, rest, courage, generosity. Not comparative generosity. Not cultural generosity. But whether it is generosity with the way that you see people. Again, a normal, healthy person is going to think negatively of somebody and you're going to assume that that person meant well. Generosity with your words, because nobody has ever been encouraged too much. Generosity with your time. Generosity with the financial resources that God's given you. But in situations where people should be angry, apathetic, workaholics, always just trying to fit in, never rocking the boat, giving a little, but never surprising people with what they give. The Bible says it is possible for you to work in such a way that you stand out and that you surprise people. And it isn't just because you're so happy, well-adjusted, brave, and selfless. It's possible. And for the people that you want to see around you become followers of Jesus, it might be that before you have that conversation with them about Jesus, which we want to do, before you invite them into a gathering like this, it might be you remembering the opportunity and the possibility to work in such a way that they see somebody who's happy and rested and brave and generous, and they go, what is that? Can I help you understand what this looks like in a church? What does it look like? How do we know we're doing God's work, God's way in a church? We'll talk specifically about Christ Community, but if you're here from out of town, if you're visiting family, if you're visiting friends, then this would be true of any church. How do you know that? Let me give it simply here. A church doing God's work in God's way grows. It grows wide. We should see more people becoming followers of Jesus, but it also grows deep. There's a depth in the community that things like joy and rest and courage and generosity become the culture. This just becomes the way that we operate in such a profound degree that none of us can explain exactly how it happened, because it's a joy that says we're not that happy. I mean, we're not naturally that happy people, and we can see what you see. Life is hard, it's difficult, but still joy. We're all working full lives here, y'all. I know sometimes we look at other people in different life stages and go, man, they have it easy. Everybody's working a full life. But how can we push the envelope in ways that are healthy and people still go, you seem rested. You don't seem frantic. You don't seem like you're always anxious. How we live courageously, where you don't see little Christian automatons, you don't see little Christian clones all over the place saying the right things in cute, neat, fancy little phrases. But we are willing to say, here's who I am. I'm all in on the idea that God loves me, and because of that, that I'm all in loving God with everything that I have, everywhere that I go, and I'm all in on loving you. And that means I'm going to be generous. Growing deep as a family means that we look around and we don't just talk about fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters, but we actually have them. That we don't just talk about being a family, We actually live that way. That every man in this room looks at every other man and says, that's a father or a brother. Looks at every woman and says, that is a mother or a sister. Every woman looks at every other woman in the room and says, it's either a mother or a sister. Looks at every man and says, it's a father or a brother. It also reminds us that we need fathers and mothers. And some of us who have invested well in our children and would never think of abandoning our children and leaving them to figure this out, if you're over the age of 35, you are a mother and you are a father in this church. You want to make it obvious that not only are we doing God's work, but we're doing it God's way? Is when you and I, as fathers and mothers, don't wait for somebody else to go do the work. We don't make excuses for why we can't. If you don't know how, I'm not hard to find. We'll help you. If you look around, there are plenty of people. The idea that somebody's like, can we have coffee? They're not going to be offended. Growing deep and growing wide. Not because we're well organized, even though we want to be. Not because we're well intended, even though we want to have good intentions. But what might happen across the street when the people at White Tiger see us in this neighborhood? When people see what's happening in and through this church? What's possible? When people get around your community group, when people get around you as an individual in your workplace and they go, what in the world is happening here? Can we be people who just praise that God might take what we can feel in our hearts, a little or a lot, and to do that work in such a way that we can't ultimately look at ourselves and go, look at how smart we are, and look at how just responsible we are. But we just go, look, we worked hard. But in the end, God did this. I have two more points, but I'm going to kind of skip over them. I just want to show you two things in the rest of this text, okay? So that answer this question. Okay, what happens when you're successful? When you succeed, whatever success looks like for you, what happens when you succeed? Number one. Opposition will still be there. So you read verses 17 to 19, you read the rest of chapter 6, and you see that last little phrase in Nehemiah chapter 6 where we read that Tobias sent letters to make Nehemiah afraid. Guys, just because you win, just because we take a hill, doesn't mean that everybody's going to go, cool, great. People might look at what happens in your life and in our life together and go, I mean, God did this. Doesn't mean they're going to like it. There will always be opposition. And second, when God does God's work God's way, you look at the first three verses of Nehemiah 7, you're going to need help. You're going to need help. The one thing that I would say that I think this helps us is when you think about what the goal of parenting is. When you think of a succession plan in your company, you know, at some point in time, I will not be the lead pastor of this church. It's probable that some of you will be sitting under the ministry of the next lead pastor. That's no foreshadowing, it's just fact that unless Jesus returns, somebody else will be doing this job at some point. I'm going to go ahead and tell you what the primary categories that we should be looking for when we hire the next guy. When we're looking for new elders, when you're looking for new ministry team members, when you're looking for somebody to help you in your community group, when you're looking for somebody to help you in whatever endeavor that you're going after, when you look at Nehemiah chapter 7 and you look at verse 2, you're going to see what you're after. You are looking for people who have integrity and fear God more than most. Okay? We can talk qualifications for the office of elder from Timothy or Titus, but if you want to boil it down, it boils down to this. As we raise our kids, as we look for help, as we bring people behind us, as we develop leaders, we are looking and wanting to raise up men and women who have integrity and fear God more than most. Okay? So what's here? You know that you're doing God's work God's way. You know. It's not the only way to know, but you know that you're doing God's work God's way, when spiritual outsiders look at what's happening in your life and ultimately go, I mean, they work hard, but God did this, okay? And when you do succeed, when that's happening, you will be opposed and you're going to need help. Now, the healthiest way to read the Bible goes something like this. You see something, you see a principle, okay? You hear a lesson. And the most healthy way for you to respond to that is to go, okay, let's talk about how I'm going to screw this up. It's you and me being honest about the limitation of our abilities. It's you and I being honest about our history and our own story. And so it's possible, even as we understand and get clarity about what it looks like for us to do God's work, that when our work gets hard, we stop trusting in God's way and we start trusting in our way. And you can see it, you can feel it. I know your work is hard, but why anger? Why apathy and cynicism? I know your work is hard, so why do you act like there aren't 24 hours a day and you don't need to sleep a third of that? I know work is hard, so why do you keep trying to fake it? I know work is hard. Why are you so dadgum stingy? So what do you do when you are face-to-face with the reality that, congratulations, you are doing God's work, you just said out loud, my work matters to God, but you have clear evidence in your life that this week you're doing God's work your way? How do I deal with that? What do I do with the reality when I come face to face that as a pastor, as a business owner, as a parent, as a husband, as a friend, as a family member, that I'm doing God's work, but I'm doing it my way? I'm trusting in myself. Don't think I just made up those words right there. Who do you trust in? When you're face-to-face with the realities of your work tomorrow, the decisions you have to make, the projects you have to complete, the people you need to serve, who will you trust? When you trust yourself, it goes sideways. You might have a facade of success, and it's real success, but underneath it, it's just, it's nothing. It's the Griswold family turkey from Christmas Vacation. I just want you to listen to this. You can mark it down, you can write it down, but I don't want you to go looking at it. Psalm 46, okay? One of these ancient songs that the people of Israel knew. It starts like this. It says, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. So here's what it's saying. God is a present refuge and future victory. That if the whole world implodes, and let's forget about the whole world, when your world implodes, God is a very present help. God, when your world falls to pieces, is with you. I don't know why it's happening this way, but it isn't because God abandoned you. He's with you, okay? Keep reading, verse 4. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. When my work gets hard, the image that God gives us here is a river. when you're thirsty, it becomes a way to quench your thirst. When you want to play, it becomes something that you can swim in. The benefits of that river, the reality of that river, what makes it a river, what makes it a river whose streams make glad the people of God. What makes us happy is not what God produces, but what God promises about Himself. When your work gets hard, God is with you. And if that feels flat and two-dimensional, dive. It means that God is in the midst of you. He is with you. You will not be moved because He is with you. God will help you. He is with you. He is your fortress. So, I mentioned Christmas earlier. Have at it at Christmas. Enjoy it. If you want to sing Christmas songs now, great. I'm not going to fight you. Make it count. The message of Christmas is Emmanuel. God is with us. Have fun doing the nativity scenes. Do all that kind of stuff with your kids. But you fight hard to take this season of hope and joy and to use it for the purpose that God gave it, that you might taste and see what you and I remember and experience every single time we come to this table. God is with you. Who will you trust in as you go and do your work? God says, Psalm 46 isn't just a pretty song written 2,000 years ago. It's a promise about a very real Jesus who came to this earth and He lived day after day after day, and then He died. And before He died, He broke bread in the presence of His closest friends, and He passed around a cup of wine and said, "This is my body and blood, which will be spilled for you." And every time you eat this meal, you don't merely hear God say, "I am with you." You experience it as in real, just bread, wine, grape juice. You take it in. Guys, this isn't theoretical. This is about tomorrow. This is about you doing God's work, God's way. This is about your belief that says, "I really believe that my work matters to God. I really believe that I want to be used by God to love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength in my work, and to love the people God puts around me as much as I love myself." If you miss this, you miss the possibility of what you might be able to accomplish in your work. Will you trust in yourself, or will you trust in God? Only one source will give you the joy, the rest, the courage, the generosity you need to do God's work in God's way to a degree that even people who don't believe in Jesus, who don't belong to Jesus, who may not even believe in God, can't ignore God.